Brian Carr is my pitch coach, and it was fantastic. Just on the how to structure the pitch, you know, 2 minutes is it goes by really quick. So you really have to be picky about like the content that you put in that 2 minutes. So obviously, these are seasoned coaches that really help you out. So, and I feel like a 2 minute quick pitch is much harder than like a long 20 minute. Dude, it's hard.
Welcome to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Millard Chan and Andrew Moss launched this podcast to give a voice to the countless founders, angel investors, incubators, supporters, and startup events located in San Diego.
Welcome back to another episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew, Quick Pitch 2017, Part 1 edition. Mill, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Andrew, man. How you doing?
I'm good. We had a great time at Quick Pitch this year, didn't we?
We did indeed. It was a different experience for us because we were behind the scenes recording the podcast interviews. It's nice to see what happens behind the scenes.
It was interesting to see, and it was a lot of work, but it was as enjoyable as sitting in the crowd because we got to see how the sausage is made, really, and we had a great time because we got to see the preparation from each of the contestants because we were actually right next door to the contestants recording ourselves. And to see the way that each contestant prepared was quite interesting, don't you think?
It was amazing. Before we get too much into this, let's give some framing for the listeners. So this is the John G. Watson Quick Pitch 2017. The MC for the night was Court Turner, and the co-host of the Quick Pitch competition, I'd have to really highlight Mike Kren, who's the executive director of San Diego Venture Group. They're making it easier for San Diego companies to raise money and then also making it easier for venture capitalists to invest in San Diego startups. Mike's done a great job with San Diego Venture Group, and between Tech Coast Angels and San Diego Venture Group, they put on just an awesome show.
They did. It was great to see the two groups come together and see the synergy between the two groups and how they were able to help each other out and put on a great event. And we have to give a shout out to Amy also and Ashok, who also really did help with the event.
Absolutely. Just when I didn't think that Amy Vervunic could surpass the 10-year anniversary, she absolutely did for this one.
I couldn't agree more. Why don't we jump into our experience at Quick Pitch and tell the listeners some of our thoughts?
Sure. So in previous years, the 10 finalist companies sat in the auditorium along with the audience, all facing forward and looking at whoever was pitching and the screen. And this year, 2017, they switched it up a little bit. So all the 10 finalists were in green room in the back of the auditorium. And I thought that was a great experience because I actually walked by the room. It was, like you said, adjacent to ours doing the podcast. They were, for the most part, just sitting and talking to each other, giving each other support, just shooting the breeze.
Yeah, the camaraderie between the contestants was refreshing to see, I'd say, because I didn't expect that, and I'm sure the people out in the audience really wouldn't have known exactly how things were going down, but everyone still did have their own way of preparing. Some people did spend time together talking and chatting and just shooting the breeze, as Mill said, but some people preferred to be on their own and just sort of in their own zone and, you know, to get ready for that moment.
It makes sense because this is a high-pressure moment, preparing to give a pitch in front of an auditorium of 500 people that would vote, and then a panel of judges on the stage. And for some people, they just need time to just get into the zone quietly.
Yeah, that public speaking is no joke. It is tough to do. Even if you're used to it, it's still a new experience every time you get out there and want to talk.
So just some observations about the pitches, just for food for thought. It's always a challenge when you kind of, during your pitch, you want to highlight your successes because that's going to show the credibility of you, your technology, and the company. But one interesting thing I saw was if you highlight it too well, does that help you or hurt you regarding the voters. In other words, would they say, hey, you don't really need the money. Maybe we can vote for somebody else that has promise but don't have so many successes yet.
Yeah, it definitely is interesting, and how it plays into people's subconscious, that sort of speaking about how well you're doing. It almost, yeah, I don't know necessarily if it turns people off, but it might push people in a different direction to say, oh, well, yes, this person might need the money a little bit more than this person because of how successful this other company's doing. And it was just an observation we had when we were looking back and watching the pitches ourselves.
Now, these 10 finalist companies were all coached by third parties. And you can tell that there's a lot of practice that went into their pitches, because if you take a look at the slides, in 2-minute pitch, you don't want to be have the visuals burdened with a lot of text, and they were really clean with images and numbers in large fonts.
Yeah, I mean, you want to keep it as simple as possible while also conveying the message as well as you can. It almost seems like if you have too many slides or too many images or too many words in a pitch, you tend to distract the audience and they kind of lose track of what exactly you're pitching.
Exactly. There was one cheeky presenter that in the images on one of their slides had an image of them accepting a check from another pitch competition as some sort of a subliminal influence on the voters.
I thought that was a great move. You know, it's very strategic, and you have to have mad respect for someone like that. So anyways, what we want to talk about now is just general pitch tips for when you are if you are an investor or even a founder looking to pitch to an audience, what to kind of look for and how to be successful in making a good pitch.
That's right. So full disclosure, I've pitched many, many times to investors. However, I've never done a pitch competition. And so I just can only imagine, from having been a coach in previous years, how that's like. And so, you know, kudos to those people that actually get up there in front of hundreds of people and give a pitch. But what we're going to talk about is just general pitch advice, whether you're pitching to a group of one or many. So let me just start it off. What's interesting is I've seen a lot of pitches and I've given pitches, and still it always surprises me when time after time after time I see a person getting up there to pitch for funding and they've got dead eyes, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've seen exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
It's they're passionless about their product, their service, their company. They often feel like they're on cruise control, and that's a real turnoff to people in the audience, whether it's a pitch competition or in front of an investment group.
Yeah, they've made the pitch so many times that they've just lost that edge that they probably used to have. And they, you know, maybe they've just had too many rejections, or they're just not passionate about the project. And we as investors can see that usually right off the bat if it's that obvious.
That's right.
Another thing we notice is you want to really know your product and know the industry, because, you know, usually at the end of a pitch, you have questions. And if you're not able to answer the questions or convey the answers to the questions that the investors are asking, they'll see flaws in your credibility, and it'll be a huge red flag right then and there.
That's right. You should be the expert in your company and in your industry and field, and so that you should be able to handle any type of questions that are asked to a certain level. Sometimes people test you, and the nth question is something that you can't answer, but you've answered N minus one to that point.
And usually if you see someone getting too nitpicky, other investors around would probably notice the nitpickiness and would disregard that question if it's getting just way too technical.
Exactly. Another thing is pacing. Pacing is so important, Andrew. You know what I mean. We had a situation where one of the quick pitch finalists actually went to pitch recently in front of investors. And what really struck me was how fast they were speaking. So definitely there's a difference in pacing between a 12-minute pitch and a 2-minute pitch. It's counterbalanced by a 2-minute pitch having more images and large font numbers, very few text. And a 12-minute pitch, you can actually bulk it up with a little bit more in terms of charts and tables. But in this particular case, these were experienced people, and they really had a great service, but it was overshadowed by the fact that they were speaking so quickly. And the challenge is when you're speaking too quickly, the people in the audience, whether it's investors or anybody else, think you might be trying to pull one over their eyes when it wasn't the case with this company.
Not at all. And I know who you're talking about, and it's if you speak too quickly, especially to a group of investors, you need to give them time to process the information you're giving them. And if you just keep talking and talking and talking, it gives them very little time to understand it. And even though they can see your passion for your product, it is quite distracting when you can't, you don't feel like you have time to understand exactly what they're trying to tell you.
That's right. So when I was pitch coaching myself, I basically told the entrepreneurs to let a topic breathe for a beat, right? Let an idea breathe and then move on to the next topic, because you want to bring the audience along with you on a journey, not lose them.
Absolutely. And it kind of leads into our next point, which is keep the presentation simple and understandable. If you keep it understandable and simple, the audience is going to understand it. And especially if you're pitching a medical device or something that's, you know, the average Joe wouldn't really understand what you're talking about. And even there's plenty of investors that aren't, you know, savvy in certain industries, which is completely understandable too. And what you really want to do is make sure as many people understand your idea as possible.
That's right. Lowest common denominator. And in connection with that, Andrew, just know your audience. If it so happens that you're pitching towards domain experts or key opinion leaders, then it's okay to lay on the heavy jargon. But if it's to a general group or a general audience, you want to do that lowest common denominator.
I think the saying is keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah,
the KISS
right.
method, yeah.
So the final bit of advice for me is, I've pitched a number of times to investors. And so when you pitch in front of a large group, I'm talking about more than 10 people, it's really tough to think that you'd be able to connect with all of them. Ideally, that would be the case. So that every time you go into a pitch situation, what you really want to leave with is an opportunity to talk more to at least some in the audience. And so if you can make a connection, have some chemistry with at least a few of the people in the audience or investors, you increase the likelihood that even if you get turned down by the overall group, you might just be able to carry one or more people that would potentially help you perfect your pitch, help you perfect your business model, and then give you the opportunity to pitch again, whether it's to that audience or to different audiences that they might introduce you to.
Absolutely. Making that connection does make a huge difference, because it's just part of the human interaction. And if they can see that you're being genuine about yourself and that you really like your company and you know what you're talking about, it might not be a yes for this group of investors, but they might be able to put you in touch with someone else who might be able to help you along the way.
Amen to that.
In just a moment, you'll hear entrepreneur pitches and judges' comments. You'll also hear clips of the entrepreneurs right after they've gotten off stage.
Yeah, so it's really interesting when everything is so raw to kind of just hear their feedback about the experience. Because a lot of times when there's so much stuff going on, you don't, take a minute to breathe and then soak it all in. But you'll be able to hear their immediate reaction.
Couldn't agree more.
So our next finalist is Paul Sweeney from Inspiro. Please. So your time will start now.
It happens in the blink of an eye. You're headed to the hospital because your life is on the line. Two things are going to happen. You're going to get an IV, and multiple medications are going to be delivered to potentially save your life. At Inspiro, we've developed a simple fluid therapy device to address the major pitfalls of administering multiple IV medications. This includes medication errors and bloodstream infections. We were inspired by a young, medically fragile boy named Angel, who was adopted by my co-founder, Nick. Angel spent the first 3 years of his life in the hospital due to poor IV line care and bloodstream infections. But Nick brought him home, and with his 20 years of anesthesia experience, he knew the right clinical tools and techniques that could address these problems and care for his son. They're the same problems that affect millions of patients like you and me every day. They're complex problems, but there's a simple solution, and it's right here in the palm of our hand. We call it the Spade. It's like a Swiss Army knife, It has multiple ports for multiple medications. These color-coded connectors pair up with the correct syringes, preventing medication errors. And dual inline filters remove particulates, air, and microbes, which cause infections. Competitors offer a variety of products, but none of them compare to the functionality we built into this device. It provides an underlying level of protection that stops contaminants right at the spade. With our patent pending, we reached out to Stanford, UCLA, and a few other hospitals, and they all agreed to trial our device. So we reached out to the FDA regarding our 510K, and with their feedback, we started manufacturing at Phase 2 Medical. We have the opportunity to impact over 180 million lives. So if you're one of those patients that ever has to visit the OR, the ER, or the ICU, you'll know the spade's there to protect your life and your line. We are inspired by a life-saving success. And tonight, we need your vote to eliminate IV complications and usher in a new standard of care. Thank you.
Thank you. Kim, maybe a comment or two or question?
Sure. Yeah, that was a really strong presentation. Thanks. And I love how you actually capture the attention right away. How long before you think you'll have 510K approval? And what actually, from a price point standpoint, how does this actually compare to what's currently utilized in the hospital setting?
Other comments and questions?
Where do you manufacture?
Okay, just make mental notes.
And how much are you going to need to take this to production? How much funding?
All right, I'm going to let you answer.
Okay.
Because it's getting awkward for me. So go ahead and answer. Yeah.
Phase 2 Medical is a manufacturing facility in New Hampshire, so it's U.S. based. They have a facility right in Tijuana, so it's local for us, and that's why we decided to go with them. Current competitors are $30, and so we believe, even though we probably can charge a little bit more because of all the benefits we've incorporated into this device, we're going to enter that market right at that price point, be really competitive, and work on volume to improve our profit margin. And then there was one more question.
Total funding.
Total funding, right here. We need $1.2 million to launch this product. We've already raised the seed round of $100,000 from friends and family. But we really need the funding to get through manufacturing, FDA, and then build this product so we can start treating patients with it.
1.2 gets that in a hospital?
1.2 gets us to market with inventory to sell. So, and FDA, we just submitted our 510K pre-submission. So we're on the pathway. We're in talks with the FDA. We just had a nice conference call with them 3 weeks ago. We're going to submit our formal 510K in January. It'll probably be 170 days for an abbreviated from that point. So we're looking to launch this product September of next year.
Great. Rory, did you look like you?
Better use case in the OR or actually in the field with first responders?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great device in an emergency situations for first responders if they need to push multiple medications like that, or it's ideally in the OR, ICU, or you know, anywhere there's an IV line. Home health.
So. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good job.
Oh, it was fantastic. Like I said, it's all about a process and working with Jeff week in and week out, refining my pitch, clarifying it, making it just easy for the audience to capture. It was really key to this process of coaching.
So next, I'd like to invite out Jennifer Costco from Envy.
Sorry.
Maybe we'll start the two minutes
there
over,
we go.
If we could. There we go. Start now.
We've become a visual society. My name is Jennifer Costco, and I represent a team revolutionizing the way you find the things you love. Have you ever seen something online and wanted it? Then Envy is for you. But first, let me show you a few of the problems with how we currently search for the things we want.
Okay.
It is hard to believe in 2017, we are still asked to digest search results that look like this. We are overwhelmed with data and other platforms that do a great job of showing us what we want with no way of getting it until now. Envy is a visual search engine based on your location and preferences. Let me show you how it works. You're out to dinner. You take a picture of your meal, select a category. We have the wrong slide, sorry. Select a category and link it to a business whose information we've already provided for you. Simple and actionable. So when Ashley down the street is looking for her next meal, she knows exactly what she's getting and by the exact business or service provider that did it. Today, it's hair, nails, food, beverages, just five categories right here in San Diego. Tomorrow, it's anything, anywhere in the world. Envy is turning images into a conversation. A South by Southwest Accelerator finalist, Envy is the first and only of its kind. And in the 6 months since we've launched, averaging over 800 reviews per month, even Yelp didn't do that, and seeing almost twice the amount of engagement of even popular apps. Envy operates as a SaaS model for businesses in which we're developing an engine with already 50 businesses signed up for our beta that allows them to create visual menus of their services and access to real-time user-generated ads. This affects everyone in this room and a community of user-generated content that will disrupt multiple billion-dollar industries. Rethink the way you find the things you love. This is Envy.
So I'll open it up to the judges for questions and comments over the next couple of minutes.
So yeah, great presentation. So the idea is killer. How do you transform that now into a business where you have millions or tens of millions of users? Like the San Diego sense of tattoos and nails makes a lot of sense, but to make this an interesting business, it needs to be tens of millions of users, and that's the hard part.
Yes.
Go ahead and answer.
Can I answer?
Yeah, go ahead and answer.
This was not the real slide that should have been up there. It didn't show you how it works, but it should. So we go after micro-influencers. This is the coolest thing. It costs us nothing to get our users because we're going after people that already have the content that we want. These are Yelp elites and foodie bloggers. They tell us every day, where's this been? So one of our ambassadors, for example, went to vacation in Portland this past week. And I said, you know what? I'm gonna open up the platform and we're gonna let you post while you're there. I said, text me or email me if a business isn't in there and we'll add it for you. She didn't have to text me once. This is ready to scale right now. But we're focusing on density because we need to grow our content because it's a marketplace. So what we focus on right now is growing that. We focus deep engagement. We don't even have re-engagement features. That's the thing that sends you a message to say, hey, come back in. The market standard is 5 minutes. Ours is already 8. So once we get those, it's going to go up even more. So yes, we're ready to scale and it's launching at more categories, but we wanted to prove our process and focus on density first.
Kim?
I love your passion, Jennifer, and way to, you know, kudos for not missing a beat when you actually had the wrong slide. That was terrific. How do you actually prevent Pinterest, for example, from, you know, trying to actually get into the space, or once they see you're starting to actually take off, or others like Pinterest?
Yeah, so this is an actionable Pinterest. It's a visual Yelp, it's a social media. So Pinterest right now, what made Pinterest grow very quickly is you can just tag a picture and you don't have to take that picture yourself. We are essentially creating a new habit that's saying, you're not just gonna post this on social, you're gonna put it in our system. They would have to change everything about how they get that data. But we're training our users, you have to select a category, you have to link it to a business that's in the system, and most of them are, but we're training our users from the get-go how to do it. Pinterest would have to change everything in how they collect their data right now. That's not why their users like it. Their users are there to be inspired. Envy's to not only inspire, but to actually get what you see.
That's great. Thank you very much.
You know, this is really exciting. We were at South by Southwest at their accelerator, but I have to say the community here in San Diego has been unbelievable. I feel like this is a really engaging community, and just the judges, everybody that's been involved, it's been top-notch all the way.
So coming out next is Eric Grosset with Fantasy Sports Co.
Last year, over 60 million people played fantasy sports. That's about 20% of the total U.S. population and includes many of us here in this room. In fantasy sports, you draft a virtual team and compete against your friends for fun, prizes, or bragging rights. You can participate in almost any sport from football to baseball to basketball and beyond. It's a huge multi-billion dollar opportunity, and all the major players are betting big on it. But there's a problem. If you've never played fantasy sports before, then you may just think of it as that annoying thing my significant other spends hours on every week. And as a player, fantasy sports can be frustrating. Staying up to date with players and injuries is difficult and time-consuming. And even if you do, you always seem to lose to that gloating jerk of a coworker. Fortunately, we're here to help. We develop software to help people play and succeed at fantasy sports. Our proprietary algorithms take into account over 100 different actions when recommending players, thus saving you time and increasing your odds of success. Our first product, LineStar, is a mobile app that has major pull, patents, users, and love. Patents, we have 2 recently issued utility patents. Users, we have over 180,000 registered users. And love, we have over 2,000 plus reviews with an average of 4.5 stars across platforms. LineStar is your ultimate personalized cheat sheet. It does your fantasy homework for you. If DraftKings is Charles Schwab, then LineStar is Bloomberg, making you feel confident in your fantasy picks. And I'm proud to say that we've done all this as a profitable company with over $500,000 run rate in our second year in business. We consider it our mission to make playing fantasy sports fast, easy, and fun. And who knows, we might even save a relationship or two along the way. All right, now you can roast me.
Dean, you must have something to say.
I freaking love you, Eric.
Thank you, thank you.
And I mean that in the most heterosexual way.
Thank you, hey. I take all love.
And I wonder where the rest of the band is, but that's
enough. Yeah, thank you.
So my question as an investor is, if I invest in fantasy sports company, am I investing in an information service for daily fantasy sports, or are you going to make the leap and jump in the ring with FanDuel and DraftKings, or are you going to be more of a studio where you branch off to poker or horse racing or whatever is next? Like, what is fantasy sports company?
Great question. We believe that our technology can be applied to a multitude of places. We're avoiding the operator stance of DraftKings or FanDuel because there's a huge amount of risk that comes along with that. So we're staying in the information and analytics, but we do believe that can expand beyond daily fantasy and into something like horse racing, where if you go to Del Mar, the first thing you do when you get to the track is you search for Del Mar app and there's nothing there. And we definitely think that that's an opportunity for our algorithms to go to next. Thank you for your question, Dean.
Yeah, Peter, David, go ahead.
Sure, yeah. Ultimately, with your kind of business model, it's going to be important that your algorithm works, right?
Sure.
That the players that you pick, the horses that you pick, ultimately outperform the average. So how confident are you? What kind of tests have you done to show that your algorithms will work? And do you view that as a risk?
Yeah, I'm very confident in it. Obviously, our 180,000 registered users love us very dearly. The 2,000 plus reviews with an average of 4.5 stars definitely are a testament to that. But even beyond that, we do a little humble brag campaign with our customers. When we help them win $100, if they $100 or more, if they share that on social media, then we recognize them on our website, and then we give them a hat to make them an ambassador of the brand. So we've helped people win tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we're confident we're going to continue to do that. Every week they give away $1 million in a contest in DraftKings, and until we get one of those winners, we won't stop.
Great. Thank you very much. Good job, Eric.
Thank you.
Working with an outside source, in this case, Rick, who was my mentor and coach for this event, was the best possible thing that ever could have happened to me. I mean, certainly, if I didn't have that resource, this would have gone a little bit less exciting and been more of my generic pitch. And part of a pitch is knowing your audience and catering to them and delivering a message that resonates with them. And Rick totally helped me do that. So, I mean, that's what I would recommend, getting with an outside source, having them look from a different perspective than what you, your employees, your coworkers, your family, your friends would tell you. An outside source is going to be the most trusted way to do that. And who better than someone who's been through it before?
So next coming out, next finalist is Ash Robinson of Fit for Mom.
Thank you for having me here tonight. Fit for Mom has a new membership-based community app to solve the everyday challenges of modern motherhood. Moms can buy our products and classes, and they can transact with one another in our peer-to-peer marketplace. Meet Cassidy. Cassidy was one of the 1 in 6 moms diagnosed with postpartum depression. Because of this and the high cost of childcare, she left her management level position, creating a financial strain for her husband, her family, and the company that she left behind. One day, a mom invited her to Stroller Strides, Fit for Mom's signature fitness class in the park. She found so much more than fitness. She found her village of social support. Through our digital community, she met another mom where she sourced 5 hours a week of low-cost childcare. She bought an online course about returning to work after maternity leave. And she was so inspired by the change that she had made in her own life inside this community of support, she bought a franchise to help other moms. We unlocked Cassidy's economic potential, and we want to do that for the 43 million other moms nationwide. What was a mission is now become a business. In the last 18 months, we've grown from $9.3 million to $16 million in annualized run rate. Our digital community will help us catalyze the 1,800 neighborhood communities we already operate in. If we take even just the 600,000 moms we already know, and we convert 30% of those moms to our membership products and marketplace, we will create $64 million in revenue in 2019. As an entrepreneur in San Diego who's already had a successful exit to a public company in New York City, my next mission is to build a $100 million company right here in our San Diego community. We ask for your vote tonight to help us do that with Fit for Mom as we create the ripple of a healthy motherhood. Because healthy mamas raise healthy families, and that is the most important job in the entire world. Thank you.
Questions? Yeah, Peter.
So I'm curious about user acquisition strategy and the sales and marketing funnel.
So right now we have a franchise platform, which is how we've grown to 1,800 people. In San Diego, our user acquisition is $14.50 a member. In Denver, we're $3.33. And nationwide, we have an average of $16 a user. Our annual customer value is just under $600.
Quinn?
Yeah, very impressive presentation. And
thank
congratulations
you
on the business. It's tremendous. I mean, 18 million annual run rate is awesome. So what prevents somebody else like launching a similar service? Is there something, you know, unique or proprietary about what you do versus, you know, somebody else trying to copy you?
Yeah, so even with our franchisees, every single instructor that we train nationwide goes through the same certification program. And so we, right now, we're the biggest. We're the market leader. And so we have an opportunity to get out there. We're in 1,800 communities already. And then differentiating-wise is that motherhood is the driving force in a woman's life as she goes through pregnancy and into her first baby. And our program is a mom and baby workout together. One of the reasons why our user acquisition cost is so low is because women are looking for us, and we can drive them to a life cycle of product purchases and recommendations for the next 20 years.
Congratulations on your success so far, and I know I have a lot of friends who are in Stroller Strides and teach, so.
You have to come, amazing. Allison, it's time
I will
now.
Come one day. I'm curious about just what is the platform that you're developing, and to talk a little bit more about the marketplace and how you make money off of all of the users that you've already acquired.
Yeah, so right now we have what I would say is an under-monetized business model. So it's high touch, in person, we have deep brand engagement with the audience. So when we actually connect these women, the technology is really simple. It's used in many other companies. And so moms can just meet each other, they can interact with our content, they can buy an online course, but most importantly, they can meet other moms and transact business that way, which our main source of revenue is a membership fee. So moms will pay a small, maybe $9 a month access for the monthly digital membership, whereas the $70 is the in-person membership. So it makes us more accessible for more moms at the lower price point.
That's great. Thank you, Ash.
Thank you.
What struck me most about this pitch experience was that it was a way bigger deal than I thought it was going to be when I signed up. So really great event planning, really a lot of support from Tech Coast Angels and San Diego Venture Group. And I've learned a lot, and I've met a ton of really cool people.
So coming up next is Corey Mack with LaForge Optical.
Have you ever been around a group of people and forgotten someone's name? Or how about venturing around town and found yourself lost? What I'm showing you here is our vision of what is called augmented reality, your world overlaid with relevant content. And it's got some really cool applications. Like activating Shazam so you can literally see what song is playing. But we've also overcome augmented reality's biggest problems, and that these devices are often big, bulky, expensive, and just not cool. So the key is to make it cool, and here's how. We're offering multiple frame styles at a price starting under $300. It comes in three flavors, one with a camera, one with a display, and one with both. This attracts everyone from social media mavens to those pioneers who are fostering new experiences. We've made it accessible and safe. It comes in your prescription, and we've also included features that ensure the health and comfort and safety of your eyes. It's super easy. Developers can extend their smartphone apps to our platform in about a day, and wearers simply connect their eyewear to our app, and it reformats that content in the least distracting way possible. But here's my favorite part. We've been offered $250,000 to license our eyewear, and we're going to multiply that because we're going to keep licensing it to other companies. We've also garnered over $300,000 in pre-orders for our alpha prototype. We are targeting a known and familiar market, the US eyewear market, with eyewear that costs less than $100 to make. We are backed by two Asian companies that produce over 80 million pieces of eyewear, and we're working with one of Qualcomm's integration specialists to embed Snapdragon Wear technology in this eyewear. We are looking for people who believe in this vision and who believe in me, but also want to conquest the opportunity at the intersection of real-time data and big data. Thank you.
Eugene, look like your question?
Yeah, hi. That was a great presentation. I really enjoyed it. There were some good jokes, and you know that's part of what this quick pitch is about. It's about the presentation and keeping it entertaining. So, Corey, I commend you for that. I also commend you because you have some pre-orders already. So that's a great sign of traction and that, you know, as they say, the dogs are eating dog food. Once you have that, and if and when you get to launch, what does your sales and marketing outlay look like in terms of financing and strategy?
Am I allowed to answer now? Do we switch?
Oh, yeah, you're allowed.
Oh, sorry, I was... We're kind of in a box. Okay. So what we're doing is we're partnering with one of the nation's largest eye insurance companies. This is an eyewear product. We want it to be in the place where people are currently buying things that go on their face. So the camera product is sort of our gateway product, not just for the general public, but also for the 10,000 or so different people that are opticians or whatever, to really get them familiar with what this product is, because it's a little different to them, but they don't realize it's mostly the same. So we start with something simple, and then we start doing things that are a bit more complicated. I mean, no one goes to their eye doctor to buy electronics. No one goes to an electronics store to buy eyewear. So we're just starting with one of these places.
Okay. Yeah, T.
Wow, very, very cool. So
So Google and Snap are both pretty cool companies that created non-cool.
I wouldn't agree with that, but okay.
So where I was going was these companies will get cooler as the technology evolves, and you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, AR will be on everybody's head. So where will your company be then? What's your innovation? Are you the frame company? Are you the IP company around the AR? Or what is, because this is going to be in all of our glasses in 10 years, right?
That's the idea. What we really have here is we have IP on a frame architecture, which means the difference between our frames and the other ones that people see that are AR is you want to wear these outside. Your wife's not going to talk about you behind your back if you're walking outside with these things. But we also have a new lens technology as well. So when you pair those two together, you get something that, again, someone who typically designs consumer electronics just can't do. You can sit on these. For instance, we've shot BBs at these lenses. They don't, crack or shatter. You shoot a BB at most of these companies' optics, it's going to shatter. And unfortunately, your eye's behind that. So we believe that they're going to see the value in the shatter resistance. They're going to see the value in the lightweight that we have, and that's protect our IP. We'd like to interface with them. They're welcome to license it from us because we're just really here to really help them build a product better if the bigger companies want to go with it. But we really think it's going to be something that the eyewear industry likes, and we want to work with their brands.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
The value of it, I would, you know, in my early days with the company, which was just like 3 years ago, I absolutely hated elevator pitches, and this wasn't an elevator pitch, it's a quick pitch. And I got to say, after going through this, I get the value of being able to tell somebody something in 2 minutes. Because before I was just like, nah, I'll just wait until, you know, I got them set down and just realized, man, I'm missing a ton of opportunities to get people to sit down.
So coming out next from Osco Wellness is Greg Holgate.
Good evening. My name is Greg Holgate, makers. We have a company called Osco, makers of the Osco Pulse. It's also a really good electronic hangover cure. Osco Pulse is a non-drug pain relief device. I'm here to talk to you tonight about an $83 billion market of chronic pain. We've created a device based on 60 years of clinical research and development. It's used in every major medical facility around the world. The Osco Pulse delivers safe electrical impulses to the body, the way the body does, to reduce inflammation, increase circulation, and reduce pain at a cellular level. We are an FDA Class 1 device. Our competitors are devices that are used in clinics and hospitals all over the world. They cost $2,500 to $20,000. You need a prescription, you got to go inside a doctor's offices. With our device, you don't need to do that. We cost only $399. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee, and we have patents pending around our device. I want to tell you about my father, Deke Holgate. He has been suffering from vascular disease and neuropathy and pain for the last 10 years, and they've been trying to cut his legs off. After a short trial of using the Osco Pulse, his pain and swelling went away so quickly, he was able to walk for the first time in 3 days. We have over 3,500 units sold in market today. We're the fastest growing non-drug pain relief device in the country. We sell through Cardinal Health. We sell online direct through our website at oscowellness.com. We sell through affiliates. Those are our best customers that are selling our product for us every day. At Osco Wellness, we say that when pain stops, life begins. If you have a loved one that you care about, and I think everyone in here knows somebody in chronic pain, get them an Osco Pulse. Thank you very much.
Rory, please.
Yeah, electrical nerve stimulation has been around a while. What's different about this?
So we've taken that technology and we've reduced it down to small, personal, and usable.
I feel like you got a follow-up question there, Rory. No? No? Okay. Kim?
Greg, it seems like something like this is actually really needed, particularly with the opioid crisis actually that we have in the country. So kudos for sort of trying to deliver something that can help on that front. Have you been able to do longer term studies to show that there's not an issue over time with sort of desensitization, if you will?
Sure. There's 60 years of clinical data. There's over 2,800 studies on PEMF, pulse electric magnetic frequency. We've done two studies already on ours, but over the last 60 years, there's never been one adverse event ever recorded using PEMF technology. And essentially what we've done is we've taken an antiquated tech and we've reduced it down to make it personal and usable.
Yep, I knew it.
Mainly for muscular as opposed to?
So it actually frequencies on nerve, bone, soft tissue, and edema. So during a 30-minute cycle, it actually will address all those tissue types, reducing inflammation, increasing circulation, reducing pain at a cellular level.
Arthritic issues?
Yes. We have RA and OA patients and people using our product every day and having great results. We have over 40 pages of customer testimonials on our website, everyone from fibromyalgia to lower back pain.
Any competitors that you that similar products?
So no one's actually taken PEMF and reduced it to this level and made it consumer-friendly. So there's lots of clinical devices and typical bone growth stimulation companies have PEMF technology, but they charge, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for that. And by the way, when they're done, they throw them in the landfill. This is rechargeable, so you can use it and share it with people that you love.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good job.
They need to really understand their product, their industry, their focus for their business, and how they bring the greatest shareholder value by driving their business forward. And I think if they do that, then they'll be successful.
And our final finalist from Tunnel Vision VR is Cody Russell.
So, check. All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Cody Russell. I'm a naval veteran with an MBA, and my passion in life is skydiving. Skydiving has literally changed my life, and that's why I want every single person to experience this. However, unfortunately, most people will not, so they go to indoor skydiving, which is the next best thing, or was until Tunnel Vision made it better. So Tunnel Vision is revolutionizing the wind tunnel industry with innovative technologies. We are bringing skydiving to wind tunnels using virtual reality. So what that means is with our technology, people can see the world inside of that windy tube. Now, we're able to do that with our patent-pending VR helmet and some 360 footage. So think one helmet, some 360 footage, unlimited possibilities. So what that means is you can go to any one of our partnering locations around the world, and the next thing you know, you could be skydiving over Hawaii, over Dubai, you name it, Tunnel Vision flies you around the world using virtual reality. And people love it. Right now, Virgin Experience Days is selling our experience in the UK. We commercially launched in May of this year, and we are already in 4 wind tunnels around the world. And better yet, every time someone does this, my company makes $9. Now, to put that into perspective, the wind tunnel industry is a billion-dollar market that is currently growing exponentially. So with our adoption rate, conservatively speaking, within 3 years, we're looking at an opportunity that's worth tens of millions of dollars. And that's not even including the application of our technology in regards to military training. So with that being said, I invite everyone in this room today to go to one of our partnering locations and jump into virtual reality with Tunnel Vision. Thank you.
So Robert, just so I don't miss you at the end, maybe you might have a question.
Well, I don't know anything about the subject, but
perfect. Yeah.
the question I had is, this is your proprietary headgear. Are you also looking to partner with other businesses, other chains to get other locations out there?
So that's exactly what we do. Yeah. So we have a turnkey solution. We offer the hardware, software, and the content. We go and shoot all the content, and then we partner with wind tunnels. And so we are an add-on service. And then we license our platform and our IP to them.
Do you have a projection of how many locations are you anticipating?
Yes, so currently we have 15 wind tunnels that are in like the 75% and beyond in our pipeline. And actually tomorrow I'm flying out to Europe to go demo to 9 different wind tunnels, and these are all like at 95% through our pipeline. So I'm fully expecting to walk away on this demo trip with 3 to 5 contracts.
Tell us about the military usage.
So the military usage for this could apply to high-speed malfunctions and practicing emergency procedures in the wind tunnel. So right now, like, people will go, or the military will kind of go through emergency procedures, but they're on slide cars, and you're just kind of talking about it. You don't know what it feels like to have a high-speed malfunction until that happens. And so with virtual reality, we can actually go and we can rig up these high-speed malfunctions, and they can practice their emergency procedures and their body position while in the wind tunnel. And that's key, because if that happens out in real life and you freak out for some reason and your body position changes, you can get tangled up in all of your gear, and that's how you die.
Kim, I don't want to skip you again. I saw you wanted to ask a question.
No worries. Yeah. It's good presentation, Cody. That was fun.
Thank you.
And my son enjoyed actually trying it out at the demo. So it sounds like the market potential is good, and the growth is actually really seeming to work in your favor. But I'm curious if you actually anticipate other extensions, like, for example, maybe virtual reality scuba diving while you're actually in your pool or something.
So we absolutely could do that with our platform. We can put anyone in any sort of environment and then put them in VR as well. And kind of a line extension, it's kind of interesting. Like, once we launched this, we've been approached by investors about opening up our own Tunnel Vision branded wind tunnels, and then not only offering VR inside the wind tunnel, but also make it kind of like a VR complex. So you have like that multiplayer VR stuff, and then we'd add, flow riders and all that. So kind of like a huge gaming complex. Yeah.
Great. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you.
Brian Carr is my pitch coach, and it was fantastic. Just on how to structure the pitch, 2 minutes it goes by really quick. So you really have to be picky about like the content that you put in that 2 minutes. So obviously these are seasoned coaches that really help you out. So, and I feel like a 2 minute quick pitch is much harder than like a long 20 minute, dude. It's hard.
Well, that wraps up part one of episode Quick Pitch with Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew.
Let's get started. Hey folks, please subscribe to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew on iTunes and rate and review us. It helps other people find this podcast. This episode was produced by Millard Chan and Andrew Moss. Our sound editor is Lee Liang. Additional voices from Mindy Nguyen. Our theme music is Good Times by Poddington Bear from soundofpicture.com. Our podcast Sherpa is Charles Wilchett.